Good morning and welcome to Jump In Tucson. I am Ted Maxwell. This is the engagement hour. I've got Matt Neely behind the glass, as always, keeping me on time and target. The purpose of the engagement hour is to try to get everybody involved. There's a lot of different ways we can serve our country. We can serve our country through the military, or country or regions, through the military, through public safety, through healthcare, through being an educator, through being involved with a nonprofit organization. The options are limitless. The important thing is we should all be striving to make our communities better. And if we've got time, talent, or treasure, or all of the three, any way we can use those effectively to make this a better community, we should target that. That's what we want to do. We want to make it better for everyone who lives here, and that can go. It was interesting, this last weekend, I flew up and saw my brother in a town called Hayden Lake, just north of Coeur d'Alene. Population of 14,000. And one of the problems they're having right now is they're growing, and their roadways don't support their growth. They've really only got three main lines through the town. I mean, the one Highway 95 goes all the way from Coeur d'Alene all the way to the Canadian border, Matt. I mean, it hits all the way up there, and it's four, anywhere from four to six lanes all the way up from Coeur d'Alene to the border. But then you get off that main road, because a lot of traffic on that main road. Now they're on two-lane roads, you know, very similar to what we find a lot of times here in the city of Tucson. And it was interesting from that perspective, because everybody on those lanes, the roads next to the lanes, they don't want anybody going any faster. They don't want more car traffic. So even though a town of 14,000 people, they're struggling with a lot of the same issues we're struggling with now in Tucson. I also read an article this weekend. It was very interesting. It was about 15-minute cities. It was done by somebody who moved to the Virginia area, North Virginia. And him and his wife were ecstatic. They found this 15-minute city. And a 15-minute city is in design means you can get to almost anything in 15 minutes. You can get to shopping centers. You can get to entertainment. You can find the arts. You can get to a restaurant. A lot of times that 15 minutes is also contained in walking or riding, you know, a bike. It's very centric. They started looking for a condo, a small condo there. And guess what they found, Matt? Expensive. They couldn't afford it. Most of them were over $500,000. So they moved to a 15-minute city, but it was about 20 minutes away from where he was going to be working. So he had to commute to get into town. And it made him take a look around. And what he found is that we want the space that we get in suburban areas, or even in rural areas, where you get a bigger yard, you get a bigger footprint. You don't get a small economy. There's a lot of folks, even those who do desire the 15-minute cities, they still want the luxuries of having more opportunity and more expansion. So it was an interesting article. It didn't give a right or a wrong answer. It talked about the situation there, and I think we're starting to face that here in Tucson as well. And so today, I'm going to be very honored to have a guest with me who was behind RTA1 in a lot of sense. But first, when we come back from the break, I'm going to want to let him kind of talk him through introducing himself, why I introduce himself, and give you a little bit more details on who he is, what he's done for this community, and throughout his career. And then the second half hour, we're going to really get into how RTA1 came into existence and the breakdown of the need to continue our investment in our infrastructure and how it impacts our community. So appreciate everyone joining us this morning for Jump In Tucson. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk, and we'll be right back after this break. Welcome back, and you're listening to Jump In Tucson, the engagement hour, and I'm Ted Maxwell. Well, now I have the opportunity and to welcome Rick Myers to the show. Rick, thank you for joining us today.
Oh, thank you. It's an honor to be here with Tucson's newest man of the year.
Wow. Well, that's a concept for another day, but I appreciate that. You've been incredibly involved throughout the region, throughout the state, and there may be a lot of folks that don't know a lot about you. I just what I think is important is that you've been a civic leader and an advocate after an extremely long and successful business career, which, and you continued to work later in life too with startups and other stuff, and we'll touch that. But just to throw out some of the things that you've done, you've been on this Tucson Airport Authority, you've been on the Southern Arizona United Way Board, you've chaired the United Way Community Campaign, you've been a member of SALC, Southern Arizona Leadership Council, but you've also been the president of SALC and the chair of the board at one time. So that's a story we might touch a little bit on here in the this first segment. But you've also been on the Board of Regents, and you chaired the Board of Regents. And what I biggest reason I wanted to get you in, and we've talked about this for several months, is with the RTA next coming up, a lot of people don't realize you not only fought for the RTA legislation that allowed this area to have a regional transportation authority, but then you also were one of the chairs of the first campaign to get RTA 1 down. So we're going to get into that later. But Rick, first off, what brought you to Tucson?
Well, you know, I had a wonderful career in IBM. I retired in 2002 after 25 years. And I was a research and development vice president with IBM. My wife and I and two girls moved six times with the company. And the company asked me to come down and be the general manager of the IBM site here in Tucson in the late 90s. So that's what brought us here. And we've been here ever since and just love it.
Yeah, it's kind of ironic. I think in the older days where corporations were large and there was a lot of movement around, it was almost like being in the military. I mean, six assignments, that was as many as I had in the military. And I know you went TDY all the time because you got sent probably all over the country trying to deal with issues. But like myself and my family, you've found Tucson and it's your home. And you ended up serving 25 years with IBM.
Yeah, and you know, in my IBM career, doing research and development, we put out a lot of products to serve our customers and help them have more successful businesses, and that was very rewarding. So leaving that, you know, when I retired in 2003, I wanted to stay involved. I still wanted to make a difference. And when you're in IBM, your world is the world, right? I have customers all over the place. And even though you live in a community, you don't necessarily have time to focus in your community. So all of a sudden, I had this time on my hands, and it was like, what do I do? And I was a member of the Leadership Council, SALC, and the great General Bob Johnston was our leader at the time, and Bob was ready to step away. And he and Jim Click and a few others came to me and said, hey, how'd you like to take over for a while? And I thought, well, this will be interesting. I'll learn more about the community and roll my sleeves up and get involved. And that kind of launched me on getting to know a lot of people and getting the opportunity to work on a whole lot of issues in the community.
And one of the main aspects that SALC engages on is infrastructure, and the important, I mean, the missions was the same back then, and that's to bring together leadership and resources to create a vibrant economy and improve quality of life for all of our communities.
And so, I think, as you say, that's really the key. What I've loved about the Leadership Council is it's not about telling people what they should do. It's about bringing people from all walks of life together. It's about collaborating with other organizations and coming up with what's the best thing for this community moving forward and helping to advocate for that.
So you served in that role as president for 2 years, but there was a lot that was accomplished in that 2 years and a lot of it around transportation. And so when you took that role, what do you remember about being the president of SALC and what you accomplished in that time?
Well, what I remember mostly, As you pointed out, is the RTA. I mean, that was the big opportunity. We in about 2004, we were sitting around talking, and Cy Shore was looking at this effort. Another great leader in the community, and back in 1984, Phoenix had passed its first transportation plan, and then they re-upped it in 2004, and then they re-upped it again in 2024, right? And the state had given Tucson and Phoenix the ability back in the 80s to have their own transportation election and set up a regional transportation authority. And we'd actually let the law sunset because we'd never passed it. And Cy and others had to lead an effort with the legislature to say, hey, give us another chance. You know, let us go after this. And we started that in 2004. We formed a 35-member citizens committee. We formed a technical committee, well represented ethnically, geographically in the community. And we spent 2 years meeting every 2 weeks developing a plan. We would work on it in the citizens committee. It would go to the technical committee in the midweek. They'd come back to us the next week. And we went back and forth. We did 27 town halls as we developed this plan. We actually had 3 phases of it where we developed the initial plan, went out, met in the community with people. And I say 27 town halls, we probably did 150 neighborhood talks, but 27 formal town halls where we invited people in. We made changes to it based on that, and then we did it a third time, and we made final changes. In fact, the very last project to make it into the plan was the connection between Kolb Road and Sabino Canyon. And that was because of a town hall we did over on the east side where people said, the traffic on Tanque Verde is horrible. You have to do something to help us with that. And we added that project to the plan. So what I was proud about is the group we pulled together and the way we outreached to faith groups, to business groups, to environmental groups all across the community to get their input and get their buy-in that this plan was the right thing to help us move forward.
So we'll come back to that after the bottom hour, because there's a lot of similarities, but now it's a formalized structure. And I don't know if it's made that connectivity with the community as much. And I definitely want to address that with you. But this really was also the beginning of a launching point for you in some other aspects. Obviously, 2 years you were there. One of the, I'd say a lot of people say, what's your greatest accomplishments is you got General Ron Shootman to come retire, and he was going to be off to Lockheed Martin and go to San Antonio, and you convinced him to stay here and take take the lead of this organization. And what people don't realize is you then went from being the president, you were a member, then you became the president and employee running the company, and then you went to be the chair to take him through his first couple years. But I know from my perspective, that's what led me to SLC, so I'm grateful that you did that. And Ron had a long run of almost 13 years running that organization.
Well, absolutely. It was my honor to serve between two great generals and followed up by another great general and yourself. So,
I'll tell you, Bob Johnston, he was the general that was the He was a Marine. He was his history, what he's done in the military, both makes myself and General Shootman look, just like guys that like to fly F-16s. He was a true hero in this country and has done some amazing things. I miss Bob a lot. He's always been a great mentor.
And another example of like you and Bob and Ron, people who had very successful careers giving to this nation as in the military, and then as you retire, still wanting to give back and use the skills and the talent that you've developed and do it in a positive way.
Well, I do think there is a lot to be said, and that's why this show is trying to encourage people to get engaged in any manner, any form you want. You know, and I've had a lot of the folks, executive directors from nonprofit organizations, they're always looking for help. And when you find a passion that you love, you're going to want to do it again and again and again. You're going to want to keep serving, and you're going to want to keep doing something that you walk away from and go, I made a difference. And I think that's important. I think that's where a lot of us are. Well, that took you into a different role, because the governor shortly, either while you were still the president or you may have been the chair, but it was in that time frame, you got appointed to the Arizona Board of Regents.
Yes. Jan Brewer called me up one day and said, come up and have lunch with me. And I'd never met the governor. I went up and had lunch, and we had a really good talk about the state and the challenges and how the universities could help. And the next day she called back and said, I don't know how you feel, but I feel like something clicked between us yesterday, and I want to make you one of the Board of Regents. And I was like, wow. And you know, the Board of Regents is an 8-year position, a non-paid position, but a very important position where your governor is over the 3 state universities. And that was a wild ride, and something that gave me tremendous joy and tremendous intellectual satisfaction in terms of working with some of the smartest people in the world, everyone with the attitude of how can we help the people of Arizona realize their potential.
What were some of the biggest challenges you had when you were on A-Board? I know you served as the chair in 2012. and maybe 2011 as well, but you served as chair when you were finishing your term up there. What were the challenges and what were you dealing with back then? We always talk about what we're dealing with now. What were you dealing with back then?
You know, the biggest challenge we had was having enough resources to do what we needed to do.
Okay, so some of the challenges haven't changed. All right.
It's funny how that works, but again, people realize funding the universities isn't funding this thing, the universities. Funding the universities is funding us. It's funding the capability for all of us to get educated in a way that allows us to realize our potential as human beings. And trying to get people to understand that sometimes is a little difficult because they think of the universities as an elitist organizations that only so much, you know, only 20-30% of the people go and get a university education. They don't realize it's not just for those people, it's those people helping all the other people. It's whether you go to community college, go to the university, get your high school education, it's all about doing what you can do as an individual to help yourself be better and to help yourself to contribute to society. And the legislature, you know, they have a challenge. They're trying to balance a lot of different needs, whether it's transportation or education or anything else that they need to do for the state. And, you know, I personally believe we're willing to pay taxes. We just want to see that the taxes are being used for things that really make a difference and make our lives better.
I think that's a great point, and that stays pretty solid throughout everything, whether it's infrastructure, whether it's education. You know, if we know the government is using the taxes or the entities that are receiving the funding from the legislature are using it well and correctly, we see the gain. And sometimes we lose that. And you mentioned, we've seen what Pima Community College has started doing around here with the education they've got. The universities are still economic engines in this region. There's a lot to be said about that. So in 2013, you were named Tucson Man of the Year that year and recognized. But your career was far from over. And we've got about another 3 minutes. So since that point, when you gave up the regency, you've been involved in a lot of different efforts, including a couple companies. And can you kind of talk about how that kept flowing?
Well, I had a good friend that was an executive in IBM, another technology executive, and he had created a startup company, a venture-backed startup company, and he asked me if I'd come in and be the CEO. I met with the board of directors, and things worked out, and I spent 4 years helping to develop that company. We went through successful...
And you came back as a member of SALC again.
I did.
So you came back, and that's about the time I was joining at the organization as well.
We went through successful funding rounds, you know, raising money from corporations around the country as well as other venture capital firms, and that was a wonderful experience. Now, the company, COVID kind of got it, and... we weren't able to live through that period, which I'm sad, but I'm very proud of the work we did and the product we created.
So you really worked and started a company or took a company here in Tucson. What's your sense of the Tucson ecosystem for supporting new startup companies?
It was. I'll tell you, that's another point to the university. The university was so helpful. I mean, the engineers we hired were from U of A. We worked with U of A Tech Transfer on technology that we could use within the company. There were just so many linkages and the support of other companies. We needed people to build machinery for us. There were other companies in town that did that. So I was very pleased with the robustness of the support here in this community. You don't hear all these names every day, but these people are out there, these companies are out there, and they're eager to do things to grow and to help the economy.
Well, and you've had an incredible career thus far, and when we get back, we're going to switch over to the RTA, but I would be remiss if I didn't mention that you've been married. You're a wife of 46 years?
Yes, 47
years now. 47
years
now. two daughters and 5 grandchildren?
Yes.
So any of the rest of the family still in the area?
Oh, they actually are. Our oldest daughter is married to an F-16 pilot.
Oh, that's trouble. I didn't know that.
They've been all around, but he's actually stationed, active Air Force, but stationed at the Air National Guard.
Off the air, you have to tell me his name, and then you'll see if I smile or not.
And the youngest daughter is married to a chef up in Phoenix, and you know, it's wonderful to have all of them here because they've all lived other places. So it's nice now.
They've come home.
It's nice to have everybody close to us.
Three of my four are out of town now. I finally have grandkids, and they're out of town. I'm kind of hoping they'll all come back too. So you're very blessed on that role. So that's the voice of Rick Myers, very accomplished leader in this region, and we're going to delve into RTA when we get back. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Welcome back. This is Jump In Tucson, the Engagement Hour. I'm Ted Maxwell, your host. Again, the purpose of this hour is to try to get you involved. Living in this great nation we have comes with a lot of rights and responsibilities. And one of those is helping the communities, helping those around us live in a better society, in a better environment. And ultimately, we could, if you think that helping others isn't the way to go, you can think of it selfishly, because helping others is going to help you in the long run. I think that's what our guest with us today, Rick Myers, has kind of laid out, that there's a lot of times you do a lot of things that take a lot of work, and you're getting involved with others, and you're helping lift people up, but ultimately, lifting everybody up helps this entire community. I think we need to keep focusing on that. So, Rick, great story. You've coming here, and by the way, he did tell me his daughter's husband's name, and he's one heck of a pilot and a really good man out at the Tucson 162nd Wing Air Guard unit there. And there's my pitch for that organization today. Love that organization. It's obviously what brought me to Tucson. But you talked about RTA. And you were there when they had to get the reauthorization of the product, Steve Huffman and Pete Hirschberger. There was a lot of elected officials we had down here that helped get that across. And they structured it in a fairly unique manner that allowed us to have our own destiny. There is the Maricopa has to go back to the legislature every year for their reauthorization. We don't have to do that down here because of the way you structured it. But just getting authority didn't mean it was going to pass. You had lots of challenges, especially, you know, being the voice of SALC, but also now being put in charge of leading the campaign and building this coalition. You talked about the development of the plan, 27-plus town halls occurred during that time. What was the campaign like? After you'd come up with a plan that everybody agreed on was a good one for going forward. You mentioned the last project that was added. How was the engagement with the public?
Well, the engagement was trying to build trust. I think there was so much skepticism. Tucson had failed four previous transportation elections. And when I look at those elections, they tended to be single-faceted, right? Here's an election primarily focused on transit, or an election primarily focused on building new roadways. The one thing the legislature did that was, I think, good is they gave us a lot of flexibility in what we could include in the plan. Now, they did say there's one thing we couldn't include at the time, and that was maintenance. So people complained that, why didn't you do more maintenance with it? Well, the state legislature wouldn't let us. We had to have new capacity. We had to have safety. We could have bike paths, wildlife, critical linkages, transit. All those things were able to be in the plan, but we couldn't have maintenance. But that was actually to our benefit then, that we could have all those things, because in developing the plan over 2 years, we did have all those things. So when we went out to the community, we weren't just going out and saying, look at what we're doing to enhance nighttime bus service, or look at the safety things we're doing with crosswalks and bus pullouts, or look at the 35 new roadway projects that are going to give added capacity, or look at the critical wildlife linkages that are going to allow movement of animals around the community without being roadkill. Look at the new bike lanes. Look at the new greenways. I mean, look, there were so many different things in the plan that there was substance for everyone. So we had to get across to people that you may not have everything you want, but the idea is to come to a consensus of what's good for this community. And I think we were very successful because we took our time. We did a tremendous amount of outreach so that we could build that trust, so people could actually think through and say, yeah, my pet project's not in here, but there are a lot of other good things in here. And this is just one piece. So don't throw out a good plan because there's something that you didn't want. When you, there obviously were a lot of things that were going to help a lot of people.
Yeah, I think a lot of people forget that the year or maybe 2 years prior to the RTA being on the ballot, another streetcar or street trolley initiative, a transit initiative, had failed. I did speak at the 10-year reunion of the, or the 10-year celebration for the streetcar. And it was really kind of funny because we had transit folks that got up and talked about it. I got up and talked about RTA and the importance RTA was and RTA next. And at the end, when I sat down, Bob Cook, who's a gentleman I've worked with a lot on, he's a big transit advocate, he said out loud, there would be no RTA without the streetcar. And I decided to respond, and I said, Bob, there'd be no streetcar without the RTA. So to your point, you had something for everybody, and nothing was perfect, because it failed in the 60s, 70s, 80s. I mean, there were so many failed efforts, like, but they were tend to be focused only on crosstown freeways. I mean, honestly, I'd love to have a crosstown freeway other than I-10. I think it would have had been able to be designed and have minimal impact. It can't now. It's that time's come and gone. But despite that, how confident were you going into the vote? What kind of coalition did you have to build, and who were some of the key players that, I know Lynn Dusenberry, I believe, was your co-chair
Katie Dusenberry. Yes.
Lynn would like to have said that, but it was Katie. Yeah, yes. Absolutely.
No, Katie, and again, we had people like Carolyn Campbell from the environmental community, mm-hmm. Steve Farley, who was one of the big push for light rail, Steve Christie, one of the car dealers, Edmund Marquez. I mean, we had, again, people from all walks of life that were supporting this. Mary Rowley, Steve Lynn, Carol Zimmerman, they were people that were brought in to help us with the campaign and figure out how to communicate to the community. You know, it you can have a great idea, but if you can't get the word out and if you can't find the right vehicles, and this was before a lot of social media, this was before everybody was looking at their phones, you got to remember when this happened. And it was a lot tougher back then to figure out how to get on the right radio shows, how to get on the right TV shows, how to get to where people were and get them to pay attention long enough to understand this is something that was really going to be good for them.
So how many outreach meetings would you say you had as part of the campaign trying to get the voters
involved? We did 27 formal town halls. We did over 160 neighborhood association meetings that were a little more informal. We met with the different political organizations. We met with faith groups. We spoke at churches. I mean, we broke this thing up to where we were out there. And it wasn't the government people out there. It was the members of our Citizens Committee. It was the members of PAG staff. Tim Ahrens, a tremendous leader. I wish Tim were still with us, but Tim passed away, but I mean, Tim just did such a great job of bringing historical knowledge and bringing a real engineering knowledge of what it takes to do these projects so that we could have the best plan.
The night of the vote, here it was, all that work. I mean, it had been a couple years of work by not only you, but many, many others. How confident were you the day it went to the ballot?
You know, I'll tell you, we tried to do polling, and it really came down to, were people going to turn out? Were people going to take the time? This was a special election, so it's people taking the time to come out and vote. We didn't know, but when the results started coming in and looking pretty positive, it got pretty exciting. And, you know, we actually, what people would argue, this actually was a landslide, right? Where all the prior elections had basically lost 60-40. We basically won 60-40.
Right, a little higher than that even, so it was good.
The legislature had made it a little bit difficult because they said you have to win two elections. You have to win an election to approve the plan, but then you have to win an election at the same time to approve a tax to pay for the plan. So people had to vote twice for this.
And it's one of those ones when they look at the ballot, they go, wait, there's two things about a transportation plan. So which one do I like better? No. You've got to vote on both of them, and you did. So here's it. Maybe you can solve a dispute. Myself and the city manager, Tim Tamir, have a bet, and I think we're going to settle somewhere in between. The county, you hear all the time, oh, it was the suburbs and the county that carried this. And then you hear, you know, Tim was, no, I'm pretty sure the city was an overwhelming vote too. Do you remember the breakdown between the county voters and the city voters on RTA?
I don't remember the specific breakdown, but I do know that as we looked at major projects, the people in those areas voted for it.
Right.
And so it got a strong vote, just as strong a vote in the city as it did. And I think that's back to where people could see something in the plan that appealed to them. So this wasn't something where the people in Tucson were kind of carried by everybody else. The people at Tucson saw significant changes to transit, to roadway projects, to things that would improve their neighborhoods, that they supported this. And, you know, in terms of the schedule, you know, I feel a little bit bad that we didn't end up with quite enough money, but who
Correct.
Could have predicted the Great Recession of 2008? Yeah. By the way, during that recession, it would have been a lot tougher on Tucson if we didn't have the RTA, because it employed a lot of people building a lot of roadways.
It kept those companies alive. It kept the roads built going on, and people don't recognize that without the RTA in 2008, our continued advancement of our roads and our infrastructure would have stopped.
Right.
So we leveraged a lot.
So we are challenged to finish some projects, and the city of Tucson and the scheduling had some of those projects towards the end of the plan.
Right.
But, you know, that's one of the difficulties with a plan like this. We didn't have a lot of bonding, because when you do bonding, you have to pay the bonds off over time. You couldn't assume that the RTA would be re-upped, so everything would have to be paid for in that 20-year period.
Yeah. It's really closer to a cash and carry. There is a little bit of, and we're putting a little bit in RTA next, of bonding capacity just for those initial projects. Right. But after the first 5 years, it's really that cash and carry program that people have, you know, now the county's gone to a pay-go program. So if you want to make it cash and carry and make them be responsible, there's no better mantle than the RTA.
And the other thing we did towards the end of the RTA, right before the election, is we got all the mayors together and we had a big meeting, and there's a picture that has me holding up a plaque and all the mayors
I've
around
seen
me.
That.
And
yeah.
It says you're going to get what you vote for.
Right.
And it was a commitment to honor this plan. And when people voted, it wasn't just at a high level. We had all the projects listed. You know, you're going to get hundreds of bus pullouts, you're going to get these roadway projects. I mean, we put the substance out there so that people could see the detail of what they were going to get, and they had the commitment from the mayors, we're going to make sure we do this.
And for the record, it did pass strongly in the county and strongly in the city, so it wasn't one of those ones where either the county or the city pulled the other along. It passed in both, and it was an incredible lift.
It was the best example to date, and maybe since then, of this community coming together as a region and lifting all boats.
And that is so important. We're going to talk about RTA next when we come back. That's the voice of Rick Myers, civic leader. I won't say a legend, but close to a legend in this community. A couple articles out there. If you search Rick Myers, you're going to find it. You're going to get a good laugh because there's a lot of information out there about him. But most importantly for this conversation today, you were a driving force behind the first RTA. And when we come back, we'll talk about RTA next and get your thoughts on that. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. This is Jump in Tucson. Stay around for the last segment. I love it. We're back on Jump in Tucson here. And as Matt just pointed out to me, I probably would have missed it through it, but we've got a lot of road themes running through this on RTA. RTA next is what we're going to delve into right now. But what I want to do is make sure everybody understands where RTA next sits right now. We have a plan that was approved on a 5-2 vote to go to the public to get their input. We are literally at the phase of collecting input from what you, the listeners, the public, the users, maybe the users of roads, of transit, of you know, bike and ped facilities. This is your chance. So I strongly encourage everybody to go to the Regional Transportation Authority website and take a look at what's in the plan and fill out the survey. I know we've worked coming up on about 800 or 900 surveys received. We've extended the deadline to the end of January. We really want to hear what the public thinks, because the plan is not fully in place now. We can talk about a lot of it. Matter of fact, we can talk about, we've added a segment called arterial reconstruction, which is redoing an entire roadway, but it does provide, I won't say maintenance, but it takes a road that's in disarray that can't be maintained back into a good level. It takes it back up to an excellent condition and gives it another 10, 15 years of life. The other lesson that we've taken because of the shortfall in the funding, Rick, is in this plan, we're using the pessimistic view, which means 80% of the time the revenues coming in should exceed that pessimistic view. But there's never a guarantee. And in RTA 1, you mentioned we've got some shortfalls because the 2008 economic downturn, which nobody could have predicted. But if you talk to anybody in the elected officials, anybody on the board, any of the mayors, they'll all tell you RTA 1 was a success for this community. There's a commitment to complete everything, and we will get that done. We're trying to figure out exactly the best way to do that now. But what I really want to hear from you now is your thoughts on the importance of RTA next, from what you know about it. It doesn't have to be specific. It could just be about the community area, but you've seen what was a result of the hard work that the community put in to get an RTA. What's your opinion on the need for an RTA next?
Well, I'll say one thing up front, which might sound controversial. We shouldn't need it. And the only reason I'd say that is it goes back to the gas tax. People say, why are you funding using a sales tax to fund transportation? Well, the state has an 18-cent, roughly, gas tax. It hasn't changed in 40 years. And with all the electric cars, you have a lot of vehicles that are wearing the roads out now that aren't funding any kind of gas tax, right? So the only option we have to control our own destiny is through this sales tax. So I look at RTA as you can say, gee, I wish we had this or I wish we had that. Well, we don't. And if the state legislature is not going to provide the funding through an enhanced gas tax or some other revenue stream for the community, we don't have the ability to meet our transportation needs without doing this. And, even with this, everything isn't going to be there, right? The roads aren't maintained as well as they need to be. We're going to still have to come up with other ways to enhance things going forward. But this is a big step. The RTA Next is going to take a big chunk of what needs to be done. It's been developed, again, in a very broad process with a lot of input from the community. And I think as it's getting finalized now, getting this final input from people and making sure that we haven't missed anything big and that we're not just listening to people, but we're also helping to explain to people why this is something they should come to consensus on. And that's something that's so hard, it seems, in society, right? To say, well, I didn't get exactly what I want, so I'm not going to vote yes. Well, none of us get exactly what we want. But if you look at it and you see, yeah, there's some things I really like, and I can see some things my neighbor likes, and I can see some things a person in South Tucson would like, and a person living up in Oral Valley would like, then you start realizing this is about building community. This is about raising all the boats and our mutual success and our mutual commitment to each other to make our community stronger. And I think that's when you realize this is the right thing to do.
And I think that's a great point, because if you look at the breakdown on percentage, you'd mentioned, I think, 31 roadway projects. There's just over 30 roadway projects in this one. You mentioned transit. The streetcar obviously was a big chunk of money in the first one, but it also expanded and is providing operational funding for our current transit system. About the same percentage, maybe a percentage or two higher than the first, is dedicated for transit in this plan. There is categories and funding for continued wildlife preservation and the overpasses. Not enough, I understand, and this is their opportunity, that community sector, the community, to put money into it. There's safety enhancements, modernization of roads. We talked about the arterial reconstruction. It all sits in this plan. So, Rick, I appreciate you joining us today. You got any final thoughts? We got about 25 seconds.
I tell you, we've talked a lot about about leadership, and as we've been sitting here today, and this is about this community standing up and being leadership. You know, we used to say in IBM, management's about doing things right, and leadership is about doing the right things. The RTA Next is the right thing for this community.
That's a great last word. That's the voice of Rick Myers. Please tune in to Jump In Tucson with Grant Krueger tomorrow. You've been listening to 1030 The Voice. Have a great week.